Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim, and our guest today is Scott Klein. So Scott, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
Absolutely. No, appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much, guys. Scott Klein, where I live, that might be the most complicated question of this entire podcast. I am currently serving in the Army Reserves, and currently, I've been jumping around for the past few years as part of my service. So I still call Skokie, Illinois, home. Although I'm not there as often as I would like. But yes, Skokie, Illinois, just north of Chicago. And what I do for a living is really I serve. And I know we're going to have a good conversation about that. But I've had a number of things that I've done over the past decade or more. Have a master's in nonprofit management, a doctorate in education, and have been involved in many business ventures, both family business as well as starting my own consulting firm. And as mentioned, also very, very proud to serve in the U.S. Army.
Awesome. So what made you want to serve in the U.S. Army? What was that like? And, because I think that there's so many people that do what are there. I think even now you even have less enrollment than ever before. So what made you want to go ahead and make that jump and serve in the Army?
So true, Dan. Absolutely. Yeah. It's no secret recruiting is struggling right now. But ultimately, it's that sense of purpose, that mission. So I'll give you a little bit of a behind the scenes look at Scott Klein over here. My career went in exactly the opposite order. Often what you hear of kids, and I could say that being 34 years old, but kids, enlisting in the United States Army at age 18, sometimes maybe even a few months before that and having to get their parents' permission for it for an all volunteer force. And usually that's where people start. I mean, we hope that people, potentially make a career out of it, but often folks will do a term of service, so they could get their GI Bill, maybe they'll get a bachelor's degree, and then they'll move on, they'll get their first job, which is so exciting, it's awesome. They start as a, as an employee, they work their way to a supervisor, manager, director, and then maybe eventually, as people are starting to get towards the tail end of their career, they get into consulting, they start their own business or something like that. My career went in exactly the opposite order. I started in consulting. I started my own consulting firm when I was 18 years old. I joined my dad in business, took over many aspects of the firm, started a nonprofit organization that over the course of about 5 years drew about 50,000 people, all focused on business jobs, entrepreneurship, started hosting a radio show when I was 21 years old. And then either way, fast forward, I joined the Army. So to answer your question, I joined the Army at 28 years old. I was probably the oldest in my class in boot camp. It was certainly a unique experience where I was able to be, I don't like to say the father figure, but maybe big brother or uncle, maybe the cool uncle, where I was able to mentor and coach people. And that's exactly why I came in. One thing that I'd been missing from the conventional career path that many of your guests and certainly many of your listeners follow is I've been privileged to lead large organizations, but as a consultant. I've come in being able to have that high level of impact and influence. But what I did not have is being able to have that direct interaction, that direct opportunity to directly lead people. And in my opinion, there's nowhere else in, U.S. economy or in the organizational world where you could come in and your first day on the job as a junior officer, I was handed 59 of America's finest young men and women that I was privileged to directly lead to help them, form their career paths, both in the military as well as in their civilian life, and incredible, incredible honor and opportunity. And now it's been 5 years. I've been privileged to take those folks, which I'm still in close contact with, mentor, guide them. And many of them are continuing to serve. Many of them have chosen to move on, which is great, but hopefully we set them up for success. And now I'm privileged to do it at many different levels of organization. So again, career path went in different order, but still ultimately checked off many of the same boxes. And I love every minute that I'm able to serve the country because most importantly, I'm patriotic. I should have started with that. Patriotic, love my country, love to serve my country. I love it, set that influence on other people, but I really, really, it's the people that make it worth it.
Awesome. So what is the coolest place that you've been to as part of your service?
Oh my gosh, that is an awesome question. Coolest place. I have been fortunate to, in my service, I've been 73 countries just in general, not all part of service, I should be clear. I was privileged the month before I joined the Army, I went to Antarctica, so that was pretty cool. Let's see, in service, I mean, I have absolutely fallen in love with Jordan. I'll go with that. Jordan, I spent over a year serving in the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. Underrated, I think a lot of people don't talk necessarily about Jordan as necessarily a destination. They're a close ally of the United States, was privileged to train and learn and partner with many Jordanian military. And from there, it was a jumping off point to do many of the, call it conventional Army assignments, spent time in Iraq and some other locations. But Jordan has just the beauties of the literally, you know, seven wonders of the world, Petra, the Dead Sea. The people of Jordan are just incredible. So yeah, a good question. I've never been asked that before. Jordan.
So, but in terms of like when you're in places like Jordan, what does communication look like? I mean, does everybody, you know, speak English or do you speak Arabic? Like, how are you able to have these conversations with the locals there?
I love it. You're touching on all the people aspects, which is totally awesome. A little bit of both. That's probably the right answer. A little bit of both. I've been able to pick up some Arabic, which is awesome. I also, by the way, speak fluent Hebrew. So that's been helpful as well. But also, I've been privileged actually to teach many people English, but I'd say, again, I've been able to work my way around. But one bit of advice that I have for everybody, not just entrepreneurs, but certainly entrepreneurs, is become part of culture. Like, don't hide. And I've seen fellow soldiers, I'm not going to call them out by name, but you know, they go to a place like Jordan and they want to drink their coffee at a Starbucks, they want to eat their food at a McDonald's, and I'm like, come on, you're literally out and about. Like, eat the local food, eat the local cuisine, talk to local people, sit down, do local things. So yeah, communication. I thought where you're going with that question is communication in terms of soldiers, you know, staying in touch with the family. Yeah, locally, I mean, it's been awesome, and I have honestly amazing friends that I still work with pretty closely in my Army capacity, but also have become friends and personal colleagues and acquaintances.
Awesome. So yeah, I mean, I guess like in terms of family, I mean, what does that look like? Do you have family members that are traveling with you, or, you know, how are you managing that when it comes to your assignments?
Yeah, it's unique. I mean, again, people that serve in the military, God bless them. I mean, please, I know it's cliche to, again, thank folks for their service, but please, when you see people, not only, most importantly, don't thank them, because most of the service members I know honestly don't want the thanks, and it's kind of awkward. But please thank, if you see somebody walking in uniform and they're walking with a family member, please thank that family member. Please thank, if you know a National Guardsman or a reservist that's serving, please thank their employer, because they make the sacrifice. They are the ones that allow those folks to serve. Many people don't know 50% of the military essentially is National Guard Reserve, and they have a civilian life that they're juggling. So it is tough. I won't lie. It is tough. Different assignments, obviously, there's different levels of communication. I've been in places where I've been completely off the grid for weeks at a time. And then there's some places where, honestly, I probably have better reception than in downtown Chicago. But no, in the Middle East, where the majority of my assignments have been, my family has not been able to come with. I'm married, my wife has not been able to come with. I was able to bring her, because I've fallen in love with Jordan, as an example, I was able to bring her for a short visit while I was on leave. Staying connected with family, staying in contact with you know, work and things like that, it is a challenge. But it's easier now than ever. I talked to a lot of folks that have been serving, you know, over the past 20 years, and thinking about Afghanistan and, you know, their time out there, and they waited for, you know, hours on end to wait for a payphone, and hopefully they get in touch with a family member, a spouse that's pregnant or something like that. It's not quite like that right now. But many newer challenges, many challenges that didn't exist. And I will say, again, focusing on the Middle East for a moment, a lot of the United States, American population's attention is on the war in Ukraine, and the service members that are serving around there in Poland and Romania and all those places. We still have service members in the Middle East. And actually, part of my job is actually finding ways to make sure we are taking care of them. Many of them have been on rotations. I've personally spent, honestly, almost 2 years out, you know, deployed. And that's not terribly uncommon.
Makes sense. So I guess back to your business career, Can you just talk more about consulting? What kind of consulting do you do or have you done? And if somebody's worked with you, like what can they expect to see, in terms of your services?
Yeah, absolutely. It's evolved over time, but I always have called it in that category of external affairs consulting. What I found is that businesses often need to, businesses and nonprofits, I'll lump it into the same category, and then I could break it apart where I find them different, where there's advantages, where I see good things in the business world and good things in the nonprofit world, and where they can learn from each other. But I find that people go into their respective organization, I'll put it into that category, and they are expert, they are experts in what they do. You're a lawyer, you're good at being a lawyer, hopefully, I should hope. You're good at practicing law. You're a doctor, great. You're a fantastic doctor, a dentist, you're a realtor, fantastic. What they often don't know is many of the other skills, many of the other areas of expertise. So my strength has always been my communication, my ability to develop relationships. And ironically, I'm doing it right now in the military too. What I have found is helping many organizations to tell their story, tell their message, and build the partnerships that are necessary. I mean, a lot of people think of like politicians and government officials as and lobbying as a dirty word. I find it storytelling. I mean, I find it storytelling, and you want to make sure that people understand who you are and what you do. So, in a nutshell, my area of consulting has been in helping businesses and organizations, regardless of industry, tell their story, develop the partnerships, whether that means growing their clientele, helping them to pass laws, regulations, make things happen for their business. And most recently is also finding the staff, hiring the people necessary to allow you to accomplish your respective job. So that's been my area of expertise. I've done a lot of it. I honestly, the past few years, I've really been obviously focused on my service and traveling for all the reasons I just mentioned, not the best communication. But I still am proud to serve as a volunteer on with many organizations, including I'm very proud ESGR is the Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve, connecting the dots with what I just mentioned a moment ago. It's an organization, a Department of Defense organization that helps to support, show support to businesses and organizations that hire and those service members that are serving in the National Guard and the Army and Air Force Reserve.
So when you started your consulting career, were you also working with nonprofits or, because like you mentioned, lobbying? So I guess maybe, even organizations that were working with the government, maybe not government organizations. I mean, is that kind of how you got your start? Like, what industry were you serving? How'd you even start? I mean, starting at 18, obviously, is not easy. So what did that look like for you?
So true story. My first job was probably when I was about 13 years old. My dad probably broke several child labor laws. I think the statute of limitations has passed. So I'm comfortable saying this on your podcast, Dan. But I was doing my dad's invoicing for his accounting firm, and then from there, probably at 16, I started doing some financial forecasting and analysis. Again, he's in accounting, and my dad is the most awesome entrepreneur and business owner I know. So he taught me a lot. And then from there, like as I mentioned, I really started getting involved in the family business. I sort of started my own little consulting practice within the business, building my own clientele, but then eventually started sort of taking over some of those areas. So again, put it into that category of accounting. But one thing that I discovered, I started with him in 2009. I remember exactly when it was, New Year's of 09. And I had been actually, that was my formal start of working with him. Again, going back earlier than that, I'd been doing some things, but my first real job outside of the family business was in communications. I worked for a nonprofit in New York. I moved back in 09, joined my dad in business formally, and I started networking because that's what everybody told me you needed to do to grow your business. And so I started joining chambers of commerce, networking organizations, met a lot of people. And obviously, the tough economy then, lots of folks during the recession out of work, lots of businesses that were struggling. So I started putting together some networking events. And I formed an organization called Jewish B2B Networking, Jewish Business to Business Networking. Really not just Jewish community, but the idea was based on the values that I was brought up with of help people connect with each other. So I started that organization, as mentioned, over the course of about 5 years, drew about 50,000 people to our programs, organizations, got a lot of national attention, was at the White House, the Obama White House, many times over the course of his administration. And I became the chairman of the Village of Skokie's Economic Development Commission, started hosting a radio show, and which I still host to this day, called Get Down to Business. And I got into helping many, especially in the healthcare space. That was my initial sort of entree into consulting on external affairs. But then I discovered that, honestly, I loved what I was doing and bringing community together, and I wanted more of it. So I ended up getting that master's in essentially nonprofit management, and I caught the bug. As soon as I finished the master's, I went up for my doctorate in educational leadership, because I wanted to inspire and teach others to do essentially the same things that I've been doing in entrepreneurship and in nonprofit. I'm about to finish my second master's as well, and sort of caught the bug. And my wife always joked early on that I was a professional volunteer. It actually costed me a lot of money to do what I was spending the bulk of my time on. Eventually, I started actually making a living off of it, and I was fortunate that people started paying me for my services. But nonprofit, I still I have a natural affinity and bias towards.
Makes sense. So, can you talk more about your degrees? I think that when it comes to business and entrepreneurship, there is a huge debate now about, you know, college and degrees. So, can you just talk about more about just how that's helped your career and helped you grow in the business world?
So, as mentioned about sort of my career path, I've not followed any specific playbook, and I'll be the first to say that I'm a lifelong learner. I read constantly. I've actually written a book, but I'll be honest, I didn't follow anybody's real advice when it came to what I was doing. I just did what felt natural to me and what felt right. So I did not get degree 1, 2, 3, or now 4, with having a specific job in mind. What I will say is that when you have the energy and when you have the passion for something, get better at it. Professional development is key. And whether you're doing that through a formal degree program or you're listening to podcasts like this one, that's awesome. That's exactly what you need to do. So become a lifelong learner, and it could be informally, formally, but then I will say, flip it around. Make sure you're mentoring and coaching and advising others, paying it forward as much as possible. That's the most important lesson that I've learned, and I'm proud to live that each and every day. It's been interesting. I'm not done. My wife and I talk about this all the time. She thinks I'm absolutely nuts. But as soon as I finish this degree, I've already taken the LSAT, and who knows, you might be get talk to Scott Klein JD at some point. We'll see. But I love learning. I love learning because it feels good. It feels right. I'm able to pay it forward, and I have the energy and the passion to get better at what I do, so I can influence and impact as many more people as possible. But there's a lot of ways. There's a lot of ways to learn. There's a lot of ways to grow. Embrace it. Find a mentor. Find somebody that has been in your field before. Find out what they've done. And again, there's no way to become a doctor or a lawyer without going to medical school or law school. So if that's your passion, then follow your passion. What I will say on the educational front, last thing over here, is that please don't dive into something if you're just honestly not sure. If you're like, well, I don't know, so I'm going to take a student loan and I'm just going to spend $50,000, and maybe hopefully by the end of that, I'm going to figure out if I'm actually interested in that. Please don't do that. Please don't do that. And there's nothing wrong with learning strong life skills, becoming an apprentice, learning technical skills, vocational skill. I know people that are earning big money in some amazing, amazing fields. So become good at everything that you do. Always aim for excelling.
Awesome. So can you just talk more about your radio show? I'm actually originally from Chicago, so I have heard your show, you know, back in the day. So as of right now, you know, where is it being broadcast, and how did you even get the opportunity to start that show?
It's a crazy story. So as mentioned, I started a nonprofit, and I was running around and I was doing a lot of, call it, speaking and teaching. And, you know, I was, I don't know, all of 20, 21 years old at the time. And I was invited by a radio station, AM 560 in Chicago. The sales manager there, very, very good friend. He's now moved. But he invited me to come in and do a called Professional Development Talk on networking, on relationship building. I always used to use the term how to make your next handshake count, essentially how to build relationships. And so I came in, did a talk for his entire sales team for the station. And I remember I saw in the corner of the room, you've probably seen this before, but like a little whiteboard easel, but it was turned around. And so I couldn't see what was on it. And I was like, okay, whatever. I just noticed that it was furniture in the room, fine. And so he asked me, Michael turned to me and he says, hey, would you mind staying after your presentation? We want to talk to you about something. I was like, sure, whatever, cool. All good. I love to talk. I love to network. And he starts flipping around the thing. And I was like, this looks very suspicious. And it said on the board, get down to business. And I wasn't sure what it was. And essentially they were pitching me on the idea of hosting a show. He said, we're redoing our weekend lineup on the station on AM 560. And we want to really, especially in this day and age, again, we're talking about 09 to 12, a recession. We really want to talk about small business, you know, the backbone of our economy. And we want you to host the show. And I was like, I am on the other side of the microphone. I love to be interviewed. I don't like being the interviewer. This is crazy. And so I told him no, walked away, and he kept, you know, he followed up with me a couple of times and he said, I'm telling you, this will be a success. So I agreed to do a trial, and now 10 years later, I'm still doing it. It's been awesome. So it airs on, it's still in Chicago, AM560. COVID was, believe it or not, actually a good thing for me, because it was right around the time I was getting really busy in the Army. And so I stopped coming into the station and started recording virtually. And so honestly, I count on one hand the number of times that I've had to cancel or reschedule a show, but I record weekly, have had hundreds, maybe even thousands at this point, probably thousands of amazing entrepreneurs, amazing business leaders on the program. Usually pack the show. It's a 1-hour show, pack the show with about 4 guests every week, and amazing entrepreneurs, amazing authors on amazing topics, honestly, leaders in their respective fields and industries. Bring them on. We also produce an Intel podcast, which in this day and age certainly gets a lot of, you know, listeners. Encourage everybody to check it out. Get Down to Business, your favorite podcast app, or my website, sykline.com, but also on AM560 in Chicago. And it's been a blast hosting the show. And I've personally met some of the most amazing people that are honestly inspirations to me each and every day.
So speaking of those people that have been on your show, who have been some of the coolest people that you've been able to interview?
It's a great question. So it's funny, you know, naturally, I guess I would think, I don't want to assume anything about your listeners, but I would think, you know, who's the biggest name? That's how I always think of, like, you know, big CEO. I've had some very large, you know, CEOs of very large organizations. I've had mayors, members. I've had very, very impressive names. To be honest, these have not been the most impressive guests. No disrespect to any of those folks if they're tuning in. They're telling their, you know, their story. People that have made the biggest impact on the show, that honestly the clips have gone viral, have been amazing small business owners that have talked about their trials and tribulations and their stories of failure. Because we all know, everybody that's been in business or any world of professional life knows that together with every one success, chances are you've also had a failure. And they, people that are honest, people that tell their story and they say, well, I tried this and it was a mission failure. Those have been the best guests, and it sparks conversation. I know people call them. That's one thing that everybody comes on knows, is that you will get contacted, which is fun. And so this, I'm trying to think of a particular name. I'll call out Jim White, who's an amazing author, who's now a very, very dear friend. Jim White is absolutely, has been a returning guest. I've had Deepak Ori, who's a CEO of a hotel chain in Thailand, India, and New Zealand. Amazing, amazing people.
That's great, Scott. So what's the biggest piece of advice you wishes you knew before you started your career?
It's a great question. About networking, probably if you would have asked me when I actually started what networking was, I would have said Facebook. Again, now I guess Facebook's not even the thing anymore, but hey, whatever, I'll go with it. But I would have thought, you know, social media, that sort of stuff. If you would have asked my dad what networking was, he would have said telephone wiring. It's relationships and the power of relationships. I'm fortunate to have perfected that a little bit. And I pride myself, even as I'm across the globe, maintaining a lot of friendships and relationships. And yes, social media, LinkedIn helps with that, helps us. I mean, Dan, you and I have been messaging for a little while now. It's great. It allows me to know who's doing what, you know, who's in what careers and positions and all that good stuff. So I really appreciate that. But yeah, networking, relationships matter, staying in touch, and professional development. I might be good at certain things. I also know I'm really not good, and I suck at certain other things. So being self-aware and knowing to seek out mentorship, which again ties back to that networking piece. But great question. Thank you.
Awesome. So if somebody watching this wanted to reach out to you, do you mind sharing your website or just best way to get in contact with you?
Yeah, I'm honestly super easy. You search my name. It's easy. I love talking to anybody about service, talking about business, talking about entrepreneurship, talking about networking, talking about nonprofit, all these areas. I probably talk in my sleep about those topics because I do it so often. It is possible it's because of the amount of coffee that I drink that keeps me wired at all times. But all kidding aside, certainly find the podcast, Get Down to Business. Again, even if you're outside of Chicago, you can find Get Down to Business. We've had amazing people. I am the least amazing person on the show. Each and every week, I get amazing, amazing people to join me. So check it out, not for me, but for them. But my website, sykline.com, sykline.com. You can find everything about me. And my email, sk@sykline.com. And of course, I'm on LinkedIn. Very, very, very easy to get a hold of. I try to respond to every message every day. I'm always happy to help anybody that can use some advice in these areas. And I'm always eager to learn too.
Sounds great. Well, Scott, thank you so much for your time. You know, continued success in your service and in your business. We're rooting for you.
Thank you, guys. Really, really an honor joining you on the program. And best of luck to you guys. Thanks.
Thank you, Scott. Have a good one.
You too. Thanks.
Thanks. All right. Bye.
Bye.